This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Juliet Jacobs with T. Cheryl Eek in the studio with me. So today we have two stories for you. In our first one, according to statistics from the latest labour force survey, Malaysia is witnessing a spike in people leaving the labour force due to unpaid care obligations. So can integrating a gender-responsive framework into our COVID-19 policies prevent us from setting back gains in gender equality progress? So we're going to be discussing this and more with the Women's Aid Organisation.
And after that, in a COVID world, wherever you go, you're likely to be surrounded by people wearing face masks, and you're probably wearing one yourself as well. So do you still smile at the people you interact with, and how does it change your communication? So we will be exploring how face masks are affecting our interactions with the people around us. And so we'd like to hear from you. We're asking you on Twitter, how do you feel about communicating with others while wearing a mask? Do you find it difficult or weird, or do you feel that there's no difference at all? So take that poll at BFM Radio. You can also tweet us any of your other thoughts or send them over on WhatsApp 018-789-8899.
But now on to our first story. The COVID-19 pandemic has undoubtedly impacted millions of lives across the world, but it has also continued to exacerbate the existing inequalities women experience in the labour market. Mm. So we've been seeing many reports published across the globe, in fact, detailing how unemployment related to the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting women more than men. So for example, the United Nations Global Impact Academy, they released a report that said, although coronavirus job losses are impacting everyone, women are taking a harder hit than men.
Yeah, and among the reasons for this include the fact that women are more likely than men to work in low-paying, insecure and informal jobs in the first place. And also their overrepresentation in the service sector, which has been really hard hit during this time. So the same report by the UN Global Impact Academy stated that 60% of women's employment is in the informal economy, with few protections in place against dismissal and with limited access also to social protection. And the report also highlighted the fact that the global gender pay gap is stuck at 16%, leaving women more vulnerable to an economic downturn. And furthermore, as you and I know, Juliet, as schools and childcare facilities have been closed in response to COVID-19, women are further burdened with increased childcare responsibilities, and that just adds to an already uneven load.
That's right. And, you know, something that's really unique about the current crisis, I suppose compared to other recessions that, you know, the world has gone through, is the fact that we face this real economic contraction. You know, as we face it, our caregiving infrastructures have also been shut down at the same time. So with women still taking on the majority of caregiving responsibilities, as you mentioned earlier, the lack of childcare they have at home could be impacting their availability to pick up extra shifts at work, or, you know, and that could impact their employment. Mm-hmm. I mean, this could be why women are feeling the punch, I suppose, a little bit harder, because, you know, their flexibility is going down at the very moment when employers are trying to figure out who they need to let go. Really,
yeah, unfortunate. So unfortunately, they are the ones who are sort of chosen first, you know. The loss of jobs in sectors dominated by women will have a devastating impact on the whole family, especially those headed by single mothers, or where women are the primary or co-breadwinner. And we're seeing this trend here in Malaysia as well. In the latest labour force survey that was recently released, statistics showed that between January and April 2020, a net total of 183,960 prime age workers had already left the labour force. And this is the fastest rate of decline in the economically active population that we've seen in recent years. And amongst this group, most individuals cite care obligations as the primary reason for giving up employment.
Yeah, and according to the Women's Aid Organisation, or WAO, for short, some among these group could also include women who had first struggled to find employment during the economic downturn and have now decided, you know, just to permanently exit the labour force to care for the family.
WAO did clarify that even though the Department of Statistics Malaysia does not disclose the gender composition of those who left the labour force, you know, this group of leavers has historically been made up of women workers. And they also believe that this trend will only be exacerbated for the period between April and June 2020, which coincided with a longer duration of the lockdown during which there were mass closures or reduced operations of schools and care providers. Mm-hmm. So what would happen if this situation is left unchecked? The WAO believes that we will see a continued widening of the gender gap in the workforce if the Malaysian government does not integrate a gender-responsive framework into our COVID-19 policies.
Yes, and to get a better understanding on how the government can act to, you know, arrest this decline, you know, in all the progress that we've made so far, we have on the line Yap Lei Sheng, who is a senior research and advocacy officer with the Women's Aid Organization. Welcome, Lei Sheng. Thank you so much for joining us today. So before we get to, you know, the discussion on policies, can we first talk about the labor force survey that was released? What are some of the statistics that have emerged in this latest survey?
So the latest labor force survey highlights, you know, very widely reported figure that our unemployment is 5%. And I think that's quite a really bad situation. But what is less highlighted is that the number of people who have already left the labor force has also spiked, right? I think it's important to make a clear distinction between unemployment rate, which captures people who are actively seeking for employment, right? Whereas people who have already left the labor force are people who have already given up on employment. And what we have seen over the past 4 months is that although, you know, there are about 250,000 newly unemployed individuals, but there's also about 200,000 people who have left the labor force completely. And this 200,000 group in the latter category is not captured in the 5% unemployment rate.
So the WAO has called on the government to integrate a gender-responsive framework into our COVID-19 policies. Now, why did you suggest that?
So it's very important to look at the gender composition of people who have already left the labor force. So the 200,000 people, most of them cite the need to care for the family, the need to take up more caregiving obligations for quitting the labor force. And the reason this could be because this 200,000 people cite this reason is most likely because the pandemic has confined all of us to the household. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of school closures, a lot of childcare reduced operations. So a lot of there's added stress on the family. So it makes much more logical sense for them to quit the labor force and to care for the family. And, you know, in a lot of households, you know, there's a lot of gender inequality. There's a lot of thinking, a lot of stereotype that women's work is secondary. So it's much more easier for women to quit the labor force than for men to quit the labor force. And that's the first reason. The second reason could be because we also know that a lot of women's unemployment is being endangered right now, you know, especially since women's employment is concentrated in the services industry, in the tourism and hospitality industry. So this retrenched workforce, once they are newly unemployed, they might give up employment much more easier, and they might cite caregiving as the reason for doing that. And we find that, you know, it's always the elderly population who are about to retire in a few years anyway, or women's work who are seen as secondary, to cite this reason when they give up employment. So what I'm trying to say is that there's a very huge gendered kind of face to the people who have already left the labor force. And it's very important for the government to kind of target in their policies to target this group.
What would the repercussions be if they don't?
So if they do not, what we see is that we already know there's a gender wage gap, right? And we feel like, you know, this is going to be exacerbated. This will be worsened after the pandemic is over because, you know, this group of women are not searching for employment. There will be a loss of skills. There will be loss of, like, promotion. And it's just much more harder to rejoin the labor market during a recession. So it's very likely that we'll see the gender pay gap worsen over the next few years.
And, you know, that's the last thing that we want. But the WAO has identified ways that the government can act to arrest this decline. Could you walk me through them?
Definitely. I think the most prominent solution to this, like, care crisis that's going on, right, other than the economic and also the pandemic crisis going on, is that we need to recognize, reduce, and also redistribute women's care work, right? So even though the Pajana stimulus package, the recently announced government stimulus package, has a few incentives for things like that, so they have already provided about 5,000 ringgit to all childcare centers to cover the cost. They have already provided, like, they increased the tax exemption for parents who enroll their children in the childcare programs. Mm-hmm. They have also increased the tax incentives for companies to implement flexible work arrangements. But we feel like these three initiatives alone might not be enough to resolve the care crisis. You know, one of the biggest problem we see is that the 5,000 ringgit is simply not enough for childcare centers or the social care sector to tide through the crisis. You know, it's not enough to cover the loss that they have already endured over the past 3 months. And this is a very urgent issue because in Malaysia, Only about a quarter of our healthcare and social services workforce comprised of social care workers, whereas this is something that is much more higher in a country like Germany, for example, where 40% of all healthcare workers are social care workers, so meaning people who are either childcare minders, who are nursery operators, who are palliative elderly care providers. So this group of people have been hit hard by the pandemic, and we don't know if they will survive the crisis. So the 17% figure, you know, the quarter of the healthcare services workforce that comprise of this group might be even lower after the pandemic. And so we urge the government to reconsider a much more direct way of subsidizing this or providing support to this sector, because, you know, these gains, this will also translate into women's employment, right? Because once we have a stronger social care sector, we know that care will be redistributed from the shoulders of women to a much more socialized model, you know, in the public and by service providers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the biggest things that we can do. The second thing that is quite misdirected in the package is that only tax exemptions were provided for parents who enroll their kids in childcare program. But this is something that is quite misdirected because, you know, only high-income households will have to pay taxes. Whereas, you know, let's say lower-skilled women are not able to benefit from this program at all because they don't pay taxes. So it's not targeted at those the kind of vulnerable families that need childcare the most in order to free up, you know, women's labor in the workforce so that they become, you know, they could become dual-income families or something to increase the household income. But what we can do actually is to kind of like emulate Australia, you know, who has announced, the country has announced about temporary free childcare from April to January of this year for all households, regardless of their income levels.
Mm.
And I think that's a very progressive kind of solution to the crisis that we are not thinking of. You know, maybe, you know, some people might argue that we do not have the fiscal space to provide free childcare, but definitely we need to provide more subsidies for the lower income group. So that is the second component that WAO is advocating. But in the long term, it might not be enough to only use like budgetary policies or stimulus packages to look at this unfolding care crisis. We also have to urgently pass the Employment Act, which was stalled since last year. And an Employment Act amendments that was that were proposed last year was to introduce paternity leave and introduce, you know, provisions against gender-based workplace discrimination. And this is much more urgent right now because a lot of what we know is a lot of working women find it doubly hard to concentrate on work and also care work. And we expect that this might affect their work performance. And it's very important to guard against gender-based workplace discrimination because we don't want companies to unnecessarily penalize women workers who carry the double burden of paid and unpaid work. And what was proposed last year was also to introduce paternity leave within 3 to 7 days to reduce the stereotype that unpaid care work is a kind of women's only prerogative. It should also be shared much more widely within the household and between men and women together. So legal amendments are so important to complement. In fact, longer term legal amendments probably makes more sense than you know, short-term kind of fiscal measures. And finally, what we find kind of lacking in the package is that there's no elderly care support at all for families. You know, we recognize that women's work is affected by the unpaid care burdens they carry out at home, but we have a thinking that this is skewed towards only childcare, whereas, you know, a lot of unpaid care work is also carried out for elderly care. And this is something that the recently announced stimulus package did not cover at all. It is something that the government has to urgently consider in the future rounds of stimulus package or, you know, in the upcoming budget that they're going to announce.
Yeah, because, you know, so many of us fall into the sandwich generation, right? Not only do we have children to take care of, we also have our elderly parents to take care of as well. And, you know, imagine if we're facing unemployment. I mean, wow, that incredible burden.
Yeah, it is quite dire for a lot of households. And in fact, it's quite dire on a second level because it's kind of invisible, right? A lot of these things that are going on within the households that we don't see outside. Sure. And therefore, it's like completely invisible to the policymakers as well.
Do you have any last message that you'd like to leave us with, Lei Xing?
I think that, in fact, the pandemic has, you know, surfaced a lot of existing inequalities in society. Maybe they were already there, but because of the pandemic, they are suddenly become like hyper-visible. And, you know, every crisis it's a setback, but it's also an opportunity to change things for the better, right? And WHO thinks that, and I think that it's time that we seize on this opportunity to kind of reshape how we think women's work and unpaid care work function in society. You know, unpaid care work is so central to sustaining so much around us, right?
Yeah.
If you think of the kind of domestic labor that goes into, you know, cooking, into ironing clothes, into providing food, things like that, you know, they are a subsidy to paid employment and they need to be recognized as such.
Thank you very much, Lei Xing. That was Yap Lei Xing, a senior research and advocacy officer with the Women's Aid Organization. Well, you know, I guess a silver lining of the pandemic is the possibility of seeing more laws that protect women workers. And, you know, with the kind of advocacy that groups like WAO and many other women's rights groups are pushing for, we just got to keep making more noise.
Yes.
I think. And, you know, companies too can play a huge role. They could adopt gender inclusive workplace policies and practices, including flexible work arrangements and family-friendly workplaces that will in turn encourage more balanced share of care and family responsibilities between men and women. And really, we should be seeing this not only in Malaysia, but globally as well.
Yeah, you know, like Lei Xing said, you know, it might be hidden from policymakers,
yeah,
right? So that's why it's really important to have representation, you know, in cabinet, you know, so that we have the views of everyone, you know.
Absolutely.
Inclusion, you know, to take into account all these different views when coming up with policies.
That's right.
Yes. So, you know, to use this experience to accelerate progress towards a gender equitable future, I think it's really important that we collect data disaggregated by gender, age, and other factors to track the impact of all response efforts. And I mean, we're not going to have a successful recovery unless we really center those who, you know, as I said, who are being harmed, you know, the most by this crisis. And that, of course, also means really putting the focus on the needs of women.
I mean, I always find it so amazing that we always talk about nurturing the future generations and who are we leaving our... you know, the future potential in the hands of, it's the next generation, yes, but who's also responsible for, or who's rather disproportionately bearing the burden of nurturing the future generation?
Mm-hmm.
It's women, and yet they are not getting the support that they need.
Yes, and forced to leave the labor market, you know, forced to make all these sacrifices. And even when it comes to, you know, as Lei Xing was saying, even when it comes to subsidies, it doesn't, again, cover all the different, you know, sectors of, you know, women who are in our society.
And you see that being mirrored in the way that girls are denied the right to education as well. Because when a family is facing poverty, the first to be sacrificed is the girls. They'll be taken out of school because it's thought that they can then help out at home or work, which unfairly so, right?
Yes.
It's either that women have to leave work or that girls are being pushed out of education and into the workforce way too early.
Yeah, and I mean, I was reading that, you know, in the US, for example, what's happening in terms of employment and things like that is they're forgetting all their inclusion policies because, you know, this is not the time to focus on those
right.
things.
Right. Oh, convenient, isn't
convenient
it? They're cherry picking their...
Yes, and using, you know, the economic crisis as a very convenient excuse.
Even in the US.
Even in the US. So let's hope that doesn't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as you said, Sherry, the point is to keep making noise. Mm-hmm. So hopefully our policymakers do listen and do take into account
Absolutely.
All these different needs of different women. But we're going to take a short break. But if you have any thoughts, you can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio or you can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. Before we go into that break, here's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with People Don't Get What They Deserve on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.